Hello, coffee makers, not coffee takers. He is Dr. Joseph J. Burt Miller Jr., and I am the master of cyber farms, Alfredso B. Nash Jr. We are your hosts of the Cyber Coffee Hour. We are two cyber experts from Mount Vernon, New York, sharing with you our experiences in this field and also the experiences of others so we can ultimately learn, elevate, and grow to realize we all belong in this space. The views and opinions and thoughts are those of the Cyber Coffee Hour and not those of our employers, personal or professional relationships. We are going to discuss ISSC squared study on the workforce gap, and we're going to discuss how AI can address the cyber talent shortage. To help us break this down is our federal resume writer and career success facilitator, Janine Wiggins. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you guys for having me.
Great. Yeah. This is glad you're here. Glad you're here with us today. So first, Janine Wiggins, affectionately known as Neen, is a federal career coach, a job search trainer, resume writer, and the CEO of Resumes by Neen LLC. Hailing from the vibrant heart of the Republic of Panama, she is a proud Afro-Latina. Janine is a graduate of the University of Arkansas Grantham with a Master of Business Administration and the University of Mobile with a Bachelor of Arts in Communication. She is passionate about empowering federal employees, individuals seeking federal employment, veterans, and their spouses to attain careers, allowing financial stability and purpose alignment. As a spouse of a retired Air Force combat veteran, Janine understands the challenges faced when service members transition out of the military. In return, she champions helping her clients achieve their federal career goals, resulting in higher salaries and work stability. When not leading her resume writing team, Janine is an adjunct instructor of career services for an online learning facility. In addition, she serves as a leader at her church, loves to laugh, and enjoys spending time with her husband, family, puppy, and friends. Her business is her calling and an opportunity to help federal job seekers and be the light Christ has called her to be. Neen, welcome to the Cyber Coffee Hour. So, you know, so before we dig into this, because I'm very interested in the articles that we have for today. You know, our friends that you talked about, we're going to look at the ISSC squared workforce study. And also, the other article I'm very interested in is when we talk about factoring AI and how that could be a factor with the cyber talent shortage. But before we dig into that, how are y'all both doing? Alfredso, you know, what you have going on this weekend? Like I said, your birthday's coming up, man. Like, so what are the plans?
I'm in birthday mode now. I'm pretty mobile right now, linking up with family members. I had to drive a little bit to get to the wonderful state of Connecticut. Then I'll be return tripping back to Maryland to go celebrate my birthday. So it's busy. It's busy for me. I'm in super birthday mode.
Super birthday mode. Gotcha. With The Rock coming back to WWE and, you know, turn back heel, kind of going back to like 90s Rock, you know. So that's one of her thoughts on that, because he got me hyped up.
Yeah, he's going to return with all the jabronis and all that.
Oh, man. So he's back, you know, like he's the heel Rock, you know. Cause you know, in the wrestling business, you have face, you know, like baby faces, you know, those are people who you cheer for. Heel is the one that you boo against, like, oh, man, I can't stand this guy. So he's back to like heel up Rock.
Wow.
So it's actually pretty good.
That's going to be interesting, especially these years, like you said, back to the basic 90s. Some people have not seen that version of the bad heel Rock, you know what I mean?
But I think it's making people go back and look, because, I mean, I think that's the greatness of YouTube, because, man, you can, even if you wasn't born or even don't remember certain things in history, you can go back and look at YouTube and find stuff and, you know, get yourself caught up. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can watch certain
Jack
things that
villain,
happen.
Like, you know, he was a villain at one point, a WWE villain, you know.
I even remember, you know, the times I even showed my kids, like, old, like, Muhammad Ali fights, you know, because of YouTube, because they put the fights on YouTube. And of course, the kids weren't born. I mean, I wasn't born then, but, you know, just be able to watch those events in history. For one, The Rock is still in immaculate shape. And also, too, It for me, it was a lot of nostalgia because, especially that, I think that one, I think it was SmackDown. He came back out with the, you know, the $1,000, you know, Versace shirt and all that stuff, the shades. I was like, oh man. I was like, okay, here we go. So no, I thought it was good because honestly, I don't think and this is why I haven't really watched WWE for a while, because, you know, the stars I watched, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Undertaker, of course, The Rock, coming up, Triple H, you know, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, you know, what have you. But, as, you know, as they started to age out, you know, I guess that's the thing we have in life. We get old, you know.
And getting older.
So, right. So, yeah, they started to age out. And then that allure wasn't there. And Nia, I'm sure you remember, like, the Monday Night Wars with WWE, WCW. I mean, that was really, you know, prime time. You know, when it was 9 o'clock, it was time to go home and make sure you're watching Monday Night Raw. So, like, you know, I just didn't have that anymore because the current stars just didn't quite do it for me. So It took me a while to come back and just seeing The Rock. And I think what he's doing is pushing a role. I think he's not trying to take over, but he's trying to push storylines and try to give it more substance, the way I'm looking at it. But I mean, of course, yeah, he's too old to really try to, you know, be the full face of the company. I think he will be the face, but just in a different way, kind of like how Triple H is, you know, more in the executive suite. But
He could be the company man, but he ain't doing no more rock bottoms and Jack, you know.
I mean, he'll give one out if, you know, somebody get out of line, you know.
Right.
Right. Oh, can you imagine The Rock as your supervisor? Oh my
man,
God.
I would not take him serious. You're like, why is it not done?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chair across the table. Chair.
Yeah.
Right. Like, chill out, dude.
I tried to close those tickets. Meeting. I tried to close rock bottom.
100% efficiency. Oh, my God.
There is no breach.
It doesn't matter if there's a breach.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. That would be the best run cybersecurity organization.
I can imagine, man. That'd be
crazy.
Oh,
my gosh. And then he'll look at you with the little eyebrow thing.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Like, why are you late?
Right. Critical vulnerability.
Gosh. Unbelievable.
Wow.
All right. So let's transition to, or at least try to, as we're talking, when we're looking at the workforce, I think first we want to look at this one article from CNBC. It's titled How AI and Better Pay Can Address the Ongoing Cyber Talent Shortage. And again, just be thankful The Rock is not your supervisor. So I'll start off with a excerpt from the article. So, and I quote, the cybersecurity skill shortage has been going on for years and it's getting worse with a rising number of firms citing the issue. Nearly 3/4 or 71% of IT and cybersecurity professionals worldwide surveyed earlier this year said the organizations have been impacted by the cybersecurity skills shortage, according to a report from research firm Enterprise Strategy Group, or ESG, and a cybersecurity professional organization, Information Systems Security Association. And that's a sharp increase from 57% who cited the skills gap in a study released by ESG in July 2022. So, Nina, I'll go to you first. Just like, what are some of the things that come to your mind when you hear that, especially in your role when you do have folks that are, you know, pursuing jobs and, what are some of the things that, come to your mind when you hear that?
So first off, I didn't even know that there was such a gap, like that the industry, I knew tech is like in demand because all over LinkedIn, you're like, I want to transition to tech. But right. Nobody's really talking about the cybersecurity. And I think as technology is increasing so fast, we can't keep up with the number of people we need protecting cyber. So I feel like, for one, we, especially people of color, don't know that that's an option for us. And two, there's like gatekeepers. So these gatekeepers, they all have their jobs, their buddies are getting the jobs, and nobody is really telling the job seekers what skills they need, where can we go to school to transition into this field. So I feel like your podcast is very, very important. It's going to be influential to job seekers and everybody, because we need to know these things. Even myself as a resume writer, when you sent me the articles, I was like finding some of the facts and statistics very astounding, because I'm like, wow, this is a field that we I should be promoting more of so that people can get into it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Alfredo?
Yeah, I 100% agree. I mean, I'm going to go in a little bit. I like that it says IT and cyber professionals, because my traditional IT path led me into cyber. I came in through IT operations, you know, help desk, different companies and things like that. And you're absolutely right. I had to go back to school to get a full understanding of what cyber operations was and how it was different from development operations at the time, because I thought that was the level up, right? I thought, hey, you know, I can go into DevOps, be that guy, you know, keep crunching, keep grinding, you know, build production servers and stuff. And I started to realize the biggest hit to that profession was the vulnerabilities. And I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know how to patch them up, how to build the systems and things like that. And to your point, Neen, you're right. It wasn't enough representation, right? It was kind of like going out there. Before Joseph and I reconnected, I felt like I was by myself. And I have yet to take up a leadership role, which is something I'm checking on too, because I can't look around and see the people I want to pull into these roles, right? I try to recruit, you know, mentees and different things like that. But you're right, the gap is getting bigger. You know, a few years ago, it was only like 300-something thousand. Now it's almost double. And I still look around and there's a scarcity issue. It's almost like very stressful to see, like, yeah, there are folks that could break into this industry, but they got to level up and grind too. You know, it's got to be a cross training opportunity and apprenticeship. So I can see that gap being a lot larger than it was a few years ago.
Absolutely. I 100% agree with that. And I think one of the things that come to mind for me just reading this is, because when we talk about, especially, you know, during the pandemic or at the height or advent of the pandemic, exactly. And you know, people were losing jobs, people are transitioning, and cybersecurity was one of those fields that a lot of people were pivoting to. Like, you saw a lot of marketing for cybersecurity was going up. You saw a whole bunch of, I mean, I don't think I ever saw a Udemy commercial before 2020. Honestly, I never saw a commercial for that ever.
Right. Either.
So you started seeing
and
more.
And all the schools too.
Right, yeah. So
all the cybersecurity schools.
Right. So cybersecurity marketing was going up at that, because a lot of people, like I said, they were losing jobs, jobs that weren't, you know, pandemic proof, I'd say. You know, and they looked at cybersecurity as a solution. So you did have a lot of people that were switching over. They were getting certs and things of that nature. But I think the market started to level out, and I think maybe like 2021 and 2022, now we're starting to see a lot of the growth, the rapid growth that was happening. It's starting to level out, because a lot of these organizations are like, yo, we can't, we're starting to lose money now. Like, we're hiring too much. And you've seen a massive, which is unfortunate, layoffs and things of that nature. And with that, I think it also caused a saturation within the industry, as far as when you're talking about those trying to get into cybersecurity. Because when you're looking at, as far as like from an entry level perspective, you know, you may want to, you know, those maybe trying to pursue like their A+ certification, you know, CompTIA A+ or CompTIA Security Plus, especially if you're looking at the government sector trying to get in. I think that's one of the main, you know, that's like one of the baseline requirements. You know, you need to at least have at least your Security Plus certification. Others are more great, but at minimum that at least. So when you have a bunch of people that are having, you know, the same certs and, you know, doing the study work, and like I said, you're seeing the commercials to study and get yourself leveled up. Now you start to, I think that's what caused a lot of the crazy requirements. Like, so for entry level, they want people to have a CISSP. I'm like, yo, that's nuts. Yeah, CISSP, that's after you've been in the field for at least 10 years or so.
At least 5 to 7, that's, too, right?
Right. Yeah, that is not a entry level certification. Mm-hmm. No, right. Not at all. So what I think what people need to understand from this is that what it is I need to focus on, being in tune of like how the market is changing. And also, because with this article, as it talks about AI, you know, AI is going to be a big thing. I believe we're starting to see a lot of different implementation, especially within the government. I do have my concerns. I'm not against AI. I'm embracing it. If anything, I'm trying to get ahead of it, keep myself abreast of what is going on with AI, how it's going to be used. But at the same time, we do have to make sure we have good safeguards when it comes to AI, because especially if you're looking at it from a government perspective, if different, you know, or certain intelligence agencies are using AI, mm-hmm. how is it being used responsibly so that it's not going to disclose like classified information, you know, especially to like a nation state actors or nation state actors using AI to get classified information. You know what I'm saying? Because
that's dangerous.
Right. So those areas, I feel, so those who are trying to get in, trying to get started, you may have to look at different methods now, because the, I guess the more traditional ways, I think it's starting to become a little saturated. So I think, when you're trying to address the cybersecurity shortage, you may have to look a little differently as how cybersecurity, the full view, how the whole landscape, the word was escaping me, the full landscape of cybersecurity right now and just how it's changing. And you do have to adjust and change with it as well, because if not, then you're really going to get left behind, because you have a ton of people that are applying and they all have A+ certs or security plus. It's going to be very hard. You do have to do something that's going to differentiate yourself, make yourself stand out, especially if you're getting yourself attuned with the newer technologies, emerging technologies that are occurring within the field.
I'm all for it as long as it doesn't add to the existing burnout. So one thing I'm noticing in this article is like, I'm right there with it. I've watched the IT shadow IT ops, you know, come and go. I've watched DevOps, DevSecOps come and mature. I've watched the tooling of that mature. And with all of these different, like you said, technical leaps in the landscape, something has to be done about the burnout. Now, say, you know, you're right. You have to get a skilled cadre of folks into the workforce, but at what levels? And where does the apprenticeship start? And where does the process automation start to alleviate the burnout while keeping some of these folks, well, filling the gap, right? Because they're going to use AI to fill the workforce gap, but somebody has to create and secure the AI. And these things can run 24/7 like they do now, and they're complex, you know? So you don't want the new workforce that we're filling to come in and be automatically burnt out, you know, because that's one thing I hear too with that concern is it should be incentivized to double dip. You know, we double dipped in IT operations and DevOps, and now DevSecOps and CyberOps. But what's going to happen to CyberOps and AI ops, right? It's always, as long as humans are still in the seat, there's going to be that operational need, to your point too, for classified, very sensitive information, very structured data sets, complex data sets. You know, you're going to double dip between cyber ops and AI ops. And now what happens with that burnout? You know, what happens to the lack of incentive to do that too? Because most of these companies aren't going to be paying premium dollar, you know, out the gate. You know, you're going to have to work your way up, you know, contrary to most popular opinion.
You don't think they would pay for AI centric positions?
Not out the gate, no. They have to cover their model creation, their development. They have to cover the stuff to make the models and tools first, and then hire the staff into that incentive. I don't think they're going to pay premium dollar out the gate for an entry-level position, unfortunately. We saw it with cyber, right?
So I think that's part of the article, that better pay can help bring in, I don't know if better pay brings in more skill set, because you still don't know who's applying to the jobs, but they still have to pay. Like, everything else is going up. And a lot of job seekers, they'll take a job, but then they'll leave quickly. Like this new generation. So my parents' generation, they work a job and they stay there. They don't care if they're happy, sad, what the pay is. This younger generation, like millennials and Gen Z, they're not staying at positions long.
Platform game.
Like,
it's all about that level up.
They're leveling up. Like they'll stay there 6 months, get whatever training they need, and then leave if the pay is not good.
Right.
So,
I
to
don't
your
think
point, go
I
ahead.
don't even think that's a bad thing though.
I don't think that's a bad thing, but how the
Cause
company's going to keep, like, retain employees if they're not willing to pay competitively? Because most of them are
that's
leaving
the
for
problem.
pay.
Yep. That is the
Right.
problem. The
I
retention
mean I
gets hit by the pay incentive and then the lack of training. So both of those have to line up for this workforce gap to be filled. And then the prospect of bringing my own career map to your organization, you show me the path in your organization for whatever the clip of time is. That still doesn't
And I
exist
think
in,
there's no path.
right, unfortunately,
A
right,
lot
yeah.
of these organizations have no path for you. They're like, come
Right.
in and do this job. And a lot of workers are ambitious. They don't want to just come in and do this job forever.
That's
They'll
very
do it for a
true. Yeah.
time, but they want to learn something else and like diversify their skill set.
Absolutely. No, I thought what you said, Nina, was very good. Well, caught my attention because we're talking about how the workforce was like for our parents. Yeah, because I could definitely attest to that as well. You know, my parents, they more or less stayed at their job, for 10, 20 odd years. My father, he retired now. My mom, she's getting close to retirement.
Yeah, mine too. Same. She's about a year or two away.
Right. Yeah, so like I said, yeah, so our parents' generation, that's what they've been accustomed to. Like for us, I know for myself, I've moved. If you look at my resume right now on LinkedIn, I've moved around. The most I stayed was probably like 2 years, and then I was leveling up, man. I was like, look, either I'm gonna get the promotion here or I'm gonna go somewhere else and get it.
And get it.
I'm not staying
Cyber
20,
called
30
for it.
years at one spot.
Right, cyber
Yeah,
called for
so
that level up. You couldn't get all the cyber skills in one oil.
no, right. So, because I feel like those the days of our parents were, yeah, of staying in one spot 20, 30 odd years, I think those days are over,
That's
especially
over.
within cybersecurity. Because to me, I mean, unless you're like leveling up like within the organization, like going to different roles, I think that's good too. But yeah, no, if you're staying in one spot, the same job, same pay, no, can't do it. You
No, because
gotta move
everything else
around.
is going up. And, like,
Yeah.
how are you going to afford anything? Like, milk is high. A piece of chicken is high. I don't even eat meat. And chicken is so high. I'm like, I'm glad I don't eat that.
So
Yo.
let's speak on how that increases the gap. That level of factor to get into an industry increases the gap if you stay still, right? If you stay still for a year to 2 years, to your point, most of the millennial generation, what happens to that AI skill set? If I'm not developing a large language model or Gen AI model, right? And another company down the road is doing that, doesn't that increase the gap if I don't stay and seed it for more than 2 years?
So you're saying, does it like make you stagnant as far as learning?
It makes you stagnant, but then also it keeps the gap wider for the people that don't have that skill set. Like the people that have that skill set
Oh, yeah.
aren't coming into the organization. So I feel like that also contributes to widening the gap because you're stagnant, you're not leveling up, you're in the seat, and you can't build that particular
Oh,
tool.
I get what you're
right.
saying.
Yeah. I got it now.
Oh, go ahead.
No.
I was
Go
going to say,
ahead,
to
Nina.
add to that, I feel like employers need to train. Like, if they can't find the candidate that has everything they want, hire one that is trainable. Because you can train somebody to do almost everything. Because at school, they're teaching you like theoretical concepts. You get the on-the-job training on the job.
Right.
But the problem is, they want you to have this beautiful resume with years of experience. But you can't get that if you don't get trained somewhere. So it's like a catch-22.
Or hire the trainer to train, right? So hire the person in the seat
Right.
that's doing the certification on, I hate to say this, but doing the
On site.
certification while work, yeah, right. While working in the role to because they want to jump too, right? They want to go up a couple levels. They want to punch up and talk to the directors or maybe become, have that person train the trainer for the incentive, not for free, because that's not easy,
Yeah,
right? It's not easy
that's
to
the
do the
problem.
existing job and train up,
And that's a that's experience that goes both ways. Because
Yeah.
as you mentioned, Alfredo, yeah, doing training. So you have someone that's already within the organization. They could take someone on that's coming on that's new. Say, hey, you know, this will be my mentee, you know, or whatnot, or even if you're like a team lead and this is someone that's right on my team now and I work with them to develop them. So in this scenario, as a team lead, now you're developing your management skills as you yourself want to level up and maybe get into more executive roles or higher executive roles. So I think that there's a benefit that goes both ways. I mean, you're helping someone get in that's new, trying to get into the field. And then also, so for the person that's already within the organization, they can develop those skills that is needed so they can themselves level up to more of the leadership or more executive type roles. Because you do need those skills. Those skills are needed and you do need to develop that. Because I'm sure we've all had crappy leaders or crappy supervisors because they don't know how to talk to people. They don't know how to deal with people.
Right.
So what better cybersecurity strategy is there to make somebody better than yourself, right? Sorry. Yeah. Like it just dawned on me. No. Like, I'm going to train somebody and I'm hoping that the braggadocious side of me, and it'll be a little real here, they're going to eat and they're going to be better than me. Eventually, they're going to have to replace me to go into the cybersecurity role that I want to go into, right? Like, I have to be able to make them mm-hmm. better and keep them eating, right? They have to eat these skills and tools and help me progress. So at the end of the day, I know I'll feel comfortable if this workforce was bulletproof because I trained them, right? And that doesn't seem to be the mindset. When I hear these shortages, I get a little peeved, and I'm sorry to cut you off, Joseph. I just got excited. I get a little peeved at the fact that no one seems to understand that if I'm the trainer in the seat with the skills to pay the bills, I want to make these people better so I can pass on the skill set, right, that we're talking about and close the gap mm-hmm. myself, right? I'm going to close the gap in the seat like an apprenticeship, right? Like that's exactly like right. a true apprenticeship. So that way I have the proof of training, you know, a head count of eight. I'm automatically going to be considered a leader at that point, I would hope, you know?
But not everyone thinks that way though.
No, they don't.
And that's why we had that gatekeeping issue because they had this information or you know they want to prevent people from coming in because I don't know if they think someone is going to be a perceived threat to them or their progress.
They do.
Whatever. Mm. Yeah. So, and like I said, those who have the knowledge, they don't want to share it or because they want to keep it for themselves so they themselves can move up and not lift anyone else up as they move along. So.
It's a little
to me, Fraser, I thought I did like what you said because for myself, I think that's a sign of greatness where you take someone and then you make them you get them to reach heights they never you know they never seen mm-hmm. even greater heights than yourself. I mean, because honestly, if we're not doing that, then what are we doing? Like, if we're not trying to make someone better than us, because it's almost the same principle as like, you know, a parent and a child. Like, I want my child to have a better life than me. I don't have the same life as me. No. I want you to learn from the things that I went through. But then from there to get a head start, don't make the same mistakes, but mm-hmm. realize that they're there and then be better. Like, we should be looking to get better each iteration, each generation. We should be looking to get better. But no, if you're saying like, oh, no, I don't want them to do better than me, so I'm gonna keep them down, you know what I'm saying? So I think that's foolish. I think it's absolutely foolish. Foolishness.
I think that happens in every industry, even in business. As an entrepreneur, I'm mm-hmm. all for paying for knowledge. I will pay for it. But they mm-hmm. you pay for it, and they still don't want to tell you. And I'm like, I just paid you $1,000 and learned nothing.
Oh. Like, oh, we see that all the time in pen testing.
But you say you have scaled your business to 6 figures, 7 figures. Okay, show me the blueprint. If you show me once, I can do it. But they don't want to see you do anything. I guess it's like that in cyber too, across all industries. It's like the gatekeepers. I did it, or maybe they just didn't do it. So they might not really know.
There's snakes in cyber too.
Okay.
Yeah,
we have some snakes. I ain't gonna call them out, but we our friends.
Yeah,
know.
Don't call them out.
They're snakes.
Yeah,
take me the name. I'll say it. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. we'll put down the side of the desk in the show notes. For you.
Right.
But to your point,
whistleblower.
Right, there we go. That's what we're talking about. To your point too, Joseph, the generational mindset, right? So cybersecurity ain't gonna be hot when we're in our 50s. Like when we turn the monumentous age that Rock is now, a whole nother generation of cybersecurity will pass. So we're looking at cybersecurity like we looked at the Rock in the 90s, right? And they're coming up, right? what's the next school, the new school is looking at AI like the new hotness, right? So they're gonna look at what we're doing as boring. Yeah. Let's be real. Cyber operations is gonna get boring to them. Threat intel is gonna get boring to them. Malware analysis is gonna be boring because to them, I have to write the model that does everything. That's my anticipation. Like even so now, so 20 years from now, I would hope my kid wouldn't say she wants to be a cybersecurity engineer. I would hope she wanted to be a machine learning engineer or some other, if she even chooses to get into technology, my oldest that is. And at the same time, I'm going to still want to keep up with that, right? What is the new hotness in AI doing and how is it replacing dad? You know, so we got to encourage that generation because there is a plan. I hate to even say this. There is a planned obsolescence of some of these technologies. Some of the threat intel tools are already modeled after AI. You know, they're already doing, you know, a lot of the generative AI techniques that we're studied for years. We came up on it, but it's trying to basically level up and understand that we don't have to do the job the same way. So the people coming in the door now need to understand that there's got to be an apprenticeship to say that this job will wind up being way more complex than it is now with the addition of AI, right? In addition to some of these analytical tools coming out.
Yeah. So moving along, and our second article, I think even expands on some of those numbers when we talk about looking at the workforce gap. So ISE Squared, and this is titled ISE Squared Cybersecurity Workforce Study, looking deeper into the workforce gap. So again, this is ISE Squared, article. And again, I'll read a quick excerpt, from this. I did a little bit of editing, but so the global cybersecurity workforce has reached record levels, even as the demand for skills still far exceeds the supply of available workers. ISE Squared 2023 cybersecurity workforce study has found this workforce gap was compounded by a shortage of practitioners with cloud security, AI, and machine learning skills, zero trust architectures, and the ability to problem solve and communicate. In 2023, the areas of highest workforce demand were Asia Pacific. That was up 11.8% year on year to 960,000. The Middle East and Africa up 11.7% year on year to 402,000. And North America up 11.3% year on year to 1.5 million, with Europe up 7.2% year on year to 1.3 million, and Latin America up 4.5% year on year to almost 1.3 million, making up the back of the line. Alfredo, like, these are like staggering numbers.
I'm gonna put up the Chester Tad evil grin. Find the three of us. If we got a dollar to fill every one of those seats right now, would you do it?
Of course.
Oh, I mean, we're talking about 500,000 in North America alone. I mean, I don't know that many people, but I will find that many cybersecurity people. You know, like, I mean, that's staggering. That should be a security concern. If we have a workforce that needs 500,000 to 700,000 folks just to do the job we're doing today, charge a dollar to find those people. That's $500,000 in investment. You know, like that's what tracks in my brain. And then now you task the folks in the seat, right? Their salary's going to go up. They have to go up. They have to. At the end of the day, if you want me to close the gap, I'll find 200 people to fill your headcount with. Give an incentive to do that. Give that direct incentive to the, yo, I know people are trying to either transition from IT and get into cyber or transition from a lateral non-technical field and need the trainer moment I talked about before. Those both can be incentivized and you get two times the headcount. Now watch, don't nobody steal my idea. but if you were to charge a company with that.
The bad spot if you're trying to keep your idea to yourself.
Kind of right, I know, too late, it's out there. We got you now, buddy. Right. But yeah, I mean, to me, there's a I hate to say it, but you got to monetize the idea of why does this still remain open? Is it a training? Is it a lack of incentive? The lack of people? Well, you can close that gap relatively easy by just looking at the numbers. Look at the numbers and say, hey, if I had a dollar for every one of these people, right? Doesn't matter. I mean, it looks like it's a global issue, but let's just pick on North America. $500,000 per person, right? What kind of investment is that from a government, private sector, whatever? It doesn't matter. At this point, you could close the gap if you gave people cohorts of students or existing workers to train back and go into adjuncts and say, look, I'm in the field still. You know, here's a class of 20 at a clip every semester to these employers. So I have not seen that in my career yet, right? I've seen pieces of it in different industries, but in cyber, I have not seen that yet. You know, I have not seen that direct correlation to a class of 20, 200, 2000. Here's the employers and here's the incentive to go in this industry, right? You know, so that's how I would attack it. Like, look, start at the basic high school, college, you know, that preamble age where they're going to figure out where they want to go and give them that path directly to a six-figure salary. Doesn't matter. I mean, at this point, it's going to get worse. So why not? Why not start that now?
Right.
I guess,
yeah, and I was just going to pose this to you, Neen, like, from your expertise, like looking at these different numbers, does that what does even kind of give you maybe even a sense of strategy to say, like, if someone is not even, you know, maybe getting a position here within the States, but looking at the openings that are currently out, you know, worldwide. If you, mm-hmm. you know, I'm looking at Latin America, 1.2 million, Europe, 1.3. Because also I look at it from the what's the main thing that when we're getting a job, the main thing we want to do, we're trying to get experience, right?
Experience, money, so, benefits, yeah. But experience. Right. Mm-hmm.
But the experience is what is going to get you to travel far.
Right.
If you have the experience, then you, yeah. So if you're not getting it in North America, and looking at, you know, like I said, Europe, Asia, Latin America, mm-hmm. Middle East, Africa, Asia Pacific, they have big numbers too. Do you think that could be a strategy to, or, you know, to say as someone who maybe is applying and they're looking for a job to say, you know, have
apply
you considered,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah. Is that something
it
that
is,
may come
but
up?
I don't feel like that fits everybody's lifestyle. Like, if you have children or a spouse who has a stable job here, and then you talk about, oh, I'm going to take a job overseas, like, everybody's not going to be with that. Like, I guess they would have to understand what the end goal is for both parties. Or I feel like in America, supposedly the greatest country, we should be able to fill this gap. Like, we should be able to fill this gap with people we have here.
Oh, yeah.
We're giving out money for, and I'll just, we're giving out money to everything else except cultivating talent in our own people.
Right.
Mm.
So that's all I'm going to say on that, because I could go further. But
I read between the lines.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean,
this coffee is good right now.
There's money here. It's just not being allocated to, I could say, the right things, but it's not, we're not investing in our people to have a workforce that can fill this gap. We're just saying, there's no workers, there's no workers. There's workers. Now, some people don't want to work, but there's workers. Most people want to get up and have a sense of fulfillment and purpose.
Right. Right. No, and I think that's what really drove the basis for my question, because, you know, I do feel there's a big issue with HR when it comes to hiring.
Oh, yes.
Cybersecurity.
Across the board, HR is, they just need to get rid of them, hire some new ones, because they have all this diversity, equity, inclusion. It's not including everybody still in 2024. Like, that's just something they said to be a poster, like, oh, check mark, we did this. But the people in those positions are not adhering to some of those things. They're not, because it wouldn't take so long to get a job.
It's just absolutely nuts to me. And I saw and our friends, I don't know if you got a chance to read it. I saw the headline, but I didn't read it yet. It was from the new cyber director, Harry Coker, and he was talking about the myth of the cybersecurity gap, the workforce gap. I didn't get a chance to read it. Yeah, but I saw the headline the other day. But I'm very interested. I think there's even a video interview of that as well. So I do want to check that out, because I'm very interested to learn, like, what his thoughts are on that. when it comes to that. And I do, and I know we spoke about it in a previous episode, but I do like the things that he is doing or he's working to implement to encourage more hiring. And, you know, I think one of the things he was trying to remove, like the school requirement or college requirement.
Right. We talked about that.
He was easing it. So, but no, I mean, yeah.
But North America. I'm sorry. What's go that? Ahead. Even removing the school, there are so many people with MBAs. They cannot find a job. It's so many people whatever skills they are looking for. They cannot find a job. I know we're talking about cyber, but even removing the education requirement, our generation went to school. Most of us did. That's what they told us to do. And we still cannot find jobs. Like it doesn't make sense. So
you feel that's not exactly the problem, or it's not the whole problem?
It's not the whole problem. They're not hiring, especially I can talk to the veteran population. They're not hiring veterans like they should. I don't know if they see veterans as a problem or as maybe they're going to spaz out. And I mean that respectfully. They're not. They want to work. Like they're not hiring veterans like that.
More accountable too. They don't want the leadership accountability that veteran offers does not exist. I'll just say it loosely, right? The structuring that even I'll use myself as an example. If the gap was a myth, I wouldn't have had to get 3 master's degrees to get staying.
Right.
And you then I see that. I see a respect of the veterans that have a leadership ability that doesn't exist in most of the public and private private organizations, private. Right? Mm-hmm. They know discipline, they know the structuring, they temperament or not, like they have a thicker skin to get around harder issues than most of the talent base.
I agree.
So a lot of that myth side, I'm not really sold on yet. Not about Coker because I haven't read it yet, but the myth in general is if it wasn't true, why are these studies being done? Right. Why are these salary transitions? And to your point, too, I think HR is a disconnect because they're not looking at the adversity somebody has to overcome to go apply to the job. Mm-hmm. Right. And to have the skills, get accepted into the interview, do the coding challenges if it's applicable and still be told no with all the credentials.
And go through 5 rounds of interviewing.
Right.
And still
be
told no. Like, come on, you could have told me no at the second round. You knew if you liked me or not, or if you were going to hire me.
That's just cruel.
That pays the debt. I like to say this a lot too. That pays the technical debt that we're talking about. That keeps the gap wider. Right. Mm-hmm. If somebody's in the seat doing the job and they say, hey, you know what, I can, you know, pick up a second gig or do a side job or do something to close the gap on a certification. Outside of industry, right? A lot of times, a lot of us, like you said, went to school, picked up a second job, did that whole route that most of the new generation is not going to put that level of work in, just to be real, right?
Yeah.
To close the gap that in my existing job for my next opportunity in the same company. That's me too. That's my mythology. Before I leave, let me see if I can actually contribute to getting a trainee to skill up. You know, getting somebody 2 levels or lateral to me to do the same certification. That's been going on for years. So now it seems like the myth factor is not a myth. It's happening, and it's been happening for the last 10 years. The last 10 years now, cybersecurity came to its maturity, and now we don't have a skill set of folks that have been to put in the work into these different specializations. Cyber operations, threat intel. It's like a rerun, right? A lot of this has to be, you have to pay your dues to where the specialization exists, or you're not going to have the workforce. And, you know, you can see that now, and then now add AI to the docket, right? 10 years from now, you're going to have a gap in both. You're not going to have the cybersecurity professional to secure the models, and then you're not going to have enough people to write the models and create the models securely at all. You know, so it's one and the same, but it's two people, 2 seats. Start training them now. You know,
right? So we're seeing like big so. So along with that, there are also some big gaps or shortfalls that have come from this with looking at IC Square study. So a couple of things I just wanted to point out. So they said that North America had a shortfall of 522,000 people. So I'm assuming what they mean by that is like, I guess what their goal was for hiring and that number that they said and where it actually landed. So Yeah, shortfall of 522,000 people equating to an increased gap of 19.7%. Europe recorded a gap of 348,000, up 9.7%. So the only areas in positive territory were Latin America with a shortfall that it fell 32.5% to, which equated to 348,000, and Middle East and Africa, which declined 7.1% to 112,000. So those areas, like I just mentioned, they're actually doing work to actually close the gap. So I'm actually, you know, I'm interested to see what are some of the maybe like HR practices, like what are some of the things or initiatives that they're doing to help close the gap? Because while North America, Europe, Asia Pacific, the gaps are widening, we're seeing Middle East, Africa, and Latin America, they're starting to actually close it up a bit. So I'm interested to see if maybe like what are some of the things that they did that's different from, you know, from the other regions where we're seeing the gap continue to increase.
Well, I have a suspicion, right? Are those countries' governments directly partnered to staff both public and private? Like, I don't know how it works in South America or Europe or whatever, but the only delineating line that I can see is that someone funds education, you go work in public, right? If public funds it, you work in public. If private funds it, you work in private. But I never seen this amalgamation in the United States anyway, of where I go to school, right? It's funded by an organization, wherever it may lie. And then I have a direct route into a job, right? Let's just say, like, you know, I think these other countries might be trying that. They might be trying
almost out. Like the medical field.
Yeah, almost like medical.
Yeah, I think they have a great way, like a great pipeline, like, or set up the way they do it.
So, I do too.
Yeah, because you go to college and you get, and I forget the term.
Residency.
Well, yeah, but it's something to where like you get paired with a school like after you get paired with a job. I forget. It's a proper term, but I mean, I know residency. Yes. Yeah. You working within the job. There's something else. I'm sorry. I forgot. But no, but all in all, they do have a great methodology as far as from getting from college to the actual, you know, hospital in this scenario to the hospital to where you're going to work. There is a direct connection. Cybersecurity doesn't have that.
And you know, it would be nice if the cybersecurity organizations created their own schools, because a lot of colleges have hospitals. Like I know here, one of our big hospitals, it's connected to a college. So there's no question if you become a nurse, are you going to find a job? You just work for the hospital that's connected to your college. So like the cybersecurity, I have not seen that, like you said. If they had some type of training program for the organization to say, hey, come train with us and then we will give you an entry level position, you'll continue training, or either internships, apprenticeships, something like that.
Everybody's on their own.
Yeah, they are doing it in pockets. There are federally accredited schools, but they're not all paired up. Like, how do I say this? They're paired up for particular government opportunities. The private sector, I haven't seen that in, right? So so if you go to my alma mater, right, you'll get a, you know, accredited federal, you know, degree, and then you'll be put into the, the CyberSeq workforce, right? There's a CyberSeq workforce out there, staffed up jobs. They have open positions listed, but then again, that's only a few hundred thousand roles, right? That's not the whole cumulative workforce shortage that we're seeing in North America. And to your point, I think if I looked at Latin America having a net positive, you know, closing their gap, something there seems to say that either their government's involved or their private sector entities are contributing workforce and incentive to it, right? They're contributing like direct incentive to pull talent into their particular organizations, I would suspect. But it's worth researching more to see what exactly those countries are doing to get out of the red, essentially, to get out of the red and contribute bodies to the workforce.
Right. So as we get ready to close out this article, I just want to just give a little last tidbits regarding this. So the study highlighted notable increases in the Middle East, including UAE and Saudi Arabia, significant gaps in areas like Japan, North America, and Europe. So the shortage is attributed to the growing need for cybersecurity, challenges in training, new workers, and economic conditions. The study underscores the importance of addressing skills gaps, investing in cybersecurity education, which I think is very important, and create new pathways for career development. And Neen, I think you even touched on that as well. Like, you know, as far as why would someone want to stay at this position and their career is not going anywhere? Like, right. If you're not giving me what I need, okay, I'm going to go to company X or company B or, you know, wherever. Like, I'm not going to stay here for 20, 30 odd years just doing the same thing. I'm sorry, those days are over. They're done.
Right.
What do you think about the remote aspect too? I forgot to mention that. Like if somebody had the opportunity in the United States to work remote in these countries closing the gap, you know, wouldn't that be incentive for somebody to say
wait, work in the United States? Based in the United States, but yep. You're working for a remote company?
Yeah, okay. You work for a remote company, say in the EA in Europe or in Latin America, right? How is that the same headcount essentially? Is that closing the gap?
That's interesting. I don't know. I don't know if they parsed that out. At least not on this one. They didn't break that down as far as like remote workers. They just put all workers together. Right. But that's interesting because it could. The numbers would definitely change a bit. It would definitely change for sure.
Is it safe to say that cyber jobs can be done remote? Do we trust people to do that remote?
That's the part. Some of them probably you don't want to trust them because of the type of information you're dealing with.
Yeah.
But I think when it comes to like threat detection, incident response, I hear a few like malware analysis.
People at work you can't trust. So I mean,
exactly.
I mean, yeah, that's true.
You can't. But when it comes to the operational roles, yeah, I mean, it's a service desk at the end of the day. You're answering alerts, right? You might be in a cloud provider of choice. I don't see why not. Again, it all depends on the type of customer and data you're managing, right? And then, yeah, to Joseph's point, there are insider threats that could, that could leverage that remote availability incorrectly or maliciously. Excuse me, I shouldn't say incorrectly, like with the intention to harm the workforce. So, I would say cyber operations, yes, but threat intel in those specific jobs, probably not. Like, probably not yet. Anyway,
that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah, this is good stuff. Yeah, I think, I'm looking forward to see if IC Square puts out more reports like this. I thought this was very informative. And as you mentioned, Alfred, so I am very interested to see how they factor in those remote workers and how much of an impact that does make on those numbers. So this was good. I really appreciate this discussion. So now, right now, as we like to do here at the Cyber Coffee Hour, as we break down the articles and everything like that, we like to pivot, focus our attention on our guests. And today, our guest, of course, is Neen here with us. And we're going to grill her. We're going to ask a ton of questions. You know what I'm saying? We're going to, you know,
with
make a sweat.
Yeah, charcoal or wood? Yeah. Yeah. Charcoal or gas grill?
Oh, see, so you got to go with the hickory. You got to do the blend that they have charcoal and hickory now.
Right. It doesn't matter.
Right.
There you go.
Right. It doesn't matter how you grill.
Oh, man. I did not expect so much WWE drops in this episode. But I'm for it. I love it. I love it. So, Neen, first question, and of course, this is the cybersecurity show. Mm-hmm. How has cyber impacted your career, you know, business endeavors, lifestyle, things of that nature?
Yeah, so of course, dealing with resume writing, some clients actually send me very sensitive information. So I make sure I destroy all of that. I don't print that stuff. Documents with their social on it, and I'm like, why are you emailing this?
Yeah, what are you doing?
Yeah, so I make
sure. Maybe you shouldn't apply for the show.
I make sure I reiterate, don't send me anything like that. Please don't. Because, yeah. I mean, you're putting yourself at risk. Even though I do have antivirus software and whatnot, I scan the files that I'm opening. But with, as far as cybersecurity, I actually took a class. I was in a mentorship class last year, and the next to last class emphasized how every business needed cyber. And that really kind of like dinged me because I didn't think of my resume writing business as needing cyber. But I mean, I could be breached, prayerfully not, if somebody like hacked into my computer. So I started cutting my computer off at night, exiting out of everything, and not just leaving it on indefinitely. And
You're starting to sound like Alfredo.
look, I cut every, all the devices are off at night except my phone. And then as far as customer files, I delete those. Like I'll keep it for, I'd like to keep them 2 years, but if you lose your resume, like you paid me for it, I hope you found it. But I delete those. I clear out my emails. I delete those. And then anything I need of my stuff, I'll save it to the cloud so I have a copy of it.
And
But
so that's
yeah,
your disaster recovery plan to restore back from the cloud, right?
yeah, and I'm still working on that because in that class I took, she mentioned a lot of things. I have it written in a notebook, but it's a lot to think about that I wasn't thinking about with cyber. Like it's detailed.
Alfredo, first, I'll say, Nina, I think that's great what you're doing because, Alfredo, I want to get your thoughts on this real quick. When a lot of people that are, entrepreneurs, pursuing their own business, especially when it's not based on cybersecurity. They're not thinking cybersecurity. They're just going out trying to do this, whatever, and not really following even basic cybersecurity practices. So just hearing Neen just say these things, I think it's very refreshing because one, she's not, cybersecurity focus for her business, but understanding the severity of like the information that she does gather and how important that data is to make sure to protect. I think that's great that you are exercising those practices for your business because a lot, like I said, a lot of people that are doing this that don't focus on cyber, they I don't know how they maintain it because they're not doing the I say the due diligence to ensure
There
that
you
they're
go. That's
protecting
the
the
word.
information that they have.
That's the word. That's the word. And it takes the due diligence. I hear you. You're right. You're kind of thinking like the cyber professional in the seat of what happens when I get targeted, right? Their cyber talent giving you their resumes, and then malicious actors will see you as the pivot point to know who the defenders are. So to Joseph's point, that's spot on. You're already doing the level up we were talking about earlier. Like you went to the training. You did the training while you're in the seat managing your business. A lot of folks don't do that. And then the same pivot, because that's the pivot in the seat to go get the cybersecurity training is the due diligence. I want everyone listening to realize like that is not an amateur move, right? That's not an amateur move to do a job in the existing seat and then pivot and say, I need these skills to protect myself and others. And that's what a lot is the expectation, I would like to say, of getting the experience in this field, right? You're protecting yourself and others while doing your tasks, writing resumes for cyber talented folks, and then making sure those resumes don't leak critical information or get stolen or ransomware. Let's be real. Like, it'll be ransomed and you can't get access to it to run your business. Right? So I 100% I applaud you for thinking about that and doing the training. The training is the part that the
Yeah,
resumes
that's
would need
big.
to say, I'll cut this off at night so I can, until I'm in a good defensive position to secure that data.
That's great.
Just
Alfred, do you
this
want to?
week. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was gonna say just this week I even had to change my Facebook password because I kept getting these notifications and also the two-factor authentication. I use that on everything. Because I'm getting these notifications saying, did you try to change your password? I'm like, I haven't logged into Facebook. So
Oh,
I
there you
changed the
go.
password to something like with all these extra characters and whatnot. So like the
Yeah,
threats are
that's the
real.
move.
Like the threats are real. Even because somebody would want my Facebook or my LinkedIn because I have access to so many people. They get on there, start posting something crazy. You guys know it's not me, but that's still a threat. Like still a
They're
breach, I'm
targeting.
sorry.
Yeah, they're targeting your brand at this at that point. They're trying
Yeah,
to
my brand.
manipulate your brand.
Absolutely. Alfredo, you had the next question.
Oh no, really? Oh yeah, yes. So How important is that backup strategy you had? Like, say, for example, we just said, you're being targeted, or you're taking measures to protect your organization. How important is it for you to continue to learn how to back up your data, ensure that it's not being ransomed, and be aware of people that might attack your organization that writes resumes? How important is that right now to you?
Yes, very important to me because, again, I have my clients' information. Like most of my clients, I have their address, their phone number, their employers. So even though like not a lot of things can be done with that is still that would still be a breach. So it's important for me to keep it safe because they trust me with their documents and they're paying a premium price. So I should have something in place to protect them and to protect my organization from any type of vulnerabilities.
Nice. Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Well, what are some obstacles that you've had to overcome to get where you are today?
I say myself, like you know how we decide to do something and then you get some sense of fear or what are people gonna say if I make this video?
Right.
Then let's just be real, the internet, there's so many trolls. On at
Wow.
least even yesterday on my post, somebody told me that they didn't agree with what I posted. Okay, so what I posted was still right. So if you don't agree with it, keep scrolling. So things like that can make you second guess, like, did I post the right information? So my main obstacle has been myself, like overcoming second guessing myself and knowing that I am an expert at my craft and just walking in that. So
Right.
yeah, because the internet is kind of crazy here.
No, I think that's very spot on because I deal with that myself when we talk about like imposter syndrome. I'd say as you're going along the journey of, whatever it is that you're trying to do, what you set out to accomplish. There are times when it gets tough. You start, when you have those quiet moments, you're like, man, I don't know if I can do this. Like, you're like, what in the
Yeah.
world am I doing? Like, why
That's
am
it
I
every
here?
month.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I even remember like when I first joined the military and I got to basic training in San Antonio, Texas, get off the bus and, those TIs, train instructors. They're ruthless. So as soon as you got the bus, as soon as you got the bus, you belong to them. I mean, they yelling and throwing all your stuff all over the place. And I'm saying to myself, like, what in the world am I doing? Like, why did I agree to come out here? So,
Right.
yeah. So I think a lot of times you do have to stick to it. Trust, I don't know, it may sound cliche, but really trust the process because there's a reason as to why you're doing this, why you're going through this, why you're going through this pain, because at the end of it, you will see the reward at the end. So, if it's something you truly believe in, something that you have strong beliefs in, that you know that once you get through this, once you get through whatever it is, that it will be better, and it'll be better for you. Because it also that's a, I mean, that's how you grow. I mean, point blank, that's how you grow.
Growth is
Go through the
uncomfortable.
hard stuff, right?
No,
Yeah.
it's not. There's a pressure associated with that. I mean, I think it's also honorable that you're writing the resumes to close the skill gap. Right? So there's a pressure. Is it there's a like you said, there's an imposter syndrome there. Is this my purpose? Am I going to get these folks staffed in the positions that are going to make them happy, right? Are going to improve their
Right.
lives. So there's a lot of weight in that journey.
Right. We'll tone it down a little bit. So, what is your favorite coffee that helps you throughout the day?
So I don't drink coffee. I do
Oh,
like tea.
stop the
So
interview. Stop. Not
cut it
joking.
off. It's your loss. It's your loss. Don't make me
Right.
bring the rock back in here. It
I
doesn't
think we got
matter.
I think the signal's gonna get cut right here. Now it's a second
Look, I'm
guess
a
now
tea
that doesn't drink
drinker.
coffee.
I love tea. I've been on another coffee chat before, and everybody's like, "You don't drink coffee?" I'm like, "Look, when I wake up, I'm already on 10. If I drink coffee, y'all will be sick of me. Like, I have enough energy. So I don't really drink anything caffeinated, but I love green tea, ginger tea, regular black tea. I'm a tea drinker and water."
Nice.
No, I mean, that's it does even remind me of like even my parents, because my parents, they're Jamaican, and first thing in the morning they're drinking tea. So like even coffee is different. They really just they typically don't really drink coffee much. Cause like even when I go to visit, they see me, I'll drink coffee, but no, for them that's the main thing. Like I mean, whichever type of tea, but it's always like something hot. You gotta drink something hot in the morning.
Right.
So
That's
tea
how we
is,
grew up. Drink your hot
right.
tea before breakfast. I'm like, what is
Yeah.
this doing?
So is that something like you grew up with? Like,
Yeah, we drank tea.
was that something? But yeah, but was that something that it took you a while to say, I want to start drinking tea, or it just
No, it just
kind of just
came.
came
Like,
natural?
it's not like you have choices.
Yeah,
Here's your
right.
breakfast, here's your tea, and here's your water.
Right.
This is what you're eating and drinking today.
Right.
These new kids have choices. I didn't have choices like that. But great
Man.
parents, so I don't want them to hear this and think anything.
They might call you after this episode. What about hobbies, interests, like what you like to do for fun? Like when you're not working, when you're not kneeing by resumes, like what are you doing?
I like going to comedy shows. I like
Okay.
WWE, obviously.
Obviously.
I like shopping, even though I have toned back from that, but I like shoes. So, and I particularly like Converse, so I have like a lot of Converse in different colors.
Oh, okay. Nice.
I'm not sure if
Nice.
that's a good hobby. It can be expensive. But my hobbies that don't require too much money are like comedy shows. I want to go see Cat Williams. He's coming here next month.
Nice. Okay.
And the WWE, for real. I like reading books, but I read a lot for my business. And I just
Yeah.
finished school and I read a lot. I read a lot for school, of course, and write papers. So I like reading things like articles, things where I'm going to get some information. I'm not like
Yeah.
a leisure, let's just sit down and read a book for fun. I know that sounds crazy, but I'm always reading.
That's not
So
crazy
just
at all.
sitting down reading for fun doesn't really exist for me because I'm always reading and consuming something.
It's better than some folks who don't read at all. So,
Right, exactly.
you're still better than that. So,
Yeah, so I do like to read. And then I honestly like to watch TV. I know this culture is like, if you sit down and watch TV, you won't be successful. I like to watch TV. Like, it's a mind release. I don't have to think about it too much.
Yeah.
And yeah, what I watch is trash on TV.
Uh-oh. Nice.
Let me guess.
Housewives,
Yeah, I was gonna say,
Power,
what about
Ghost.
Ready to Love, or
Oh, I haven't seen that.
I
I've
used to
watched the blind, what do you call it? The one where they don't see each other.
a blind love.
Now that makes me laugh.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah,
Yeah, that makes
I
me
think it's on
laugh.
Netflix now.
It is. Love
They're
is
like stand.
blind.
Yeah, yeah. They stand behind a wall and they talk to each other through the
Yes,
wall.
that's weird to me, but
And yeah, you gotta make a commitment to somebody as you talking to them through the wall, through
yeah.
some
I get the
drywall.
principle of it, but come on, y'all.
I don't know. I mean, and even with some of these game shows, the game shows aren't even game
They're not
shows
the
anymore.
same.
It's
I like Price is Right. I like the old game shows like Jeopardy, Price is Right. These new game
it.
shows are different.
Foolishness. I mean, I'm sorry. Maybe I'm the old man on the lawn now. Maybe that's where
is.
I've gone to.
It's definitely a, I didn't know there was other shows like that, to be honest
Yeah.
with you.
It's different now. Things are just different now.
It's not the same. I don't know. I can't get into it. Yeah, and I used to love it. I mean, Jeopardy too. And I don't know. When Alex Trebek,
He passed.
left to serve. I don't know. And then I saw everyone kind of fighting to be the host. Now I don't know. It just took
It takes
that
away.
prestigiousness from Jeopardy away
Right.
for me. And I'm like,
Right.
I like the
like,
old Jeopardy. The new ones are kind of, it's just different. We're
yeah,
just in a different time. But I guess every generation says that.
yeah. They're
That's the
gonna
truth.
criticize everything, like the stuff that we like now. Someone else gonna criticize it later.
Right.
Well, as far as movies, did you see the new Bob Marley movie?
No, I haven't seen that. Is it on streaming or in the movie theater?
No, it's in the theater.
Oh, no, I haven't actually been to the movie theater. We haven't been since before COVID. Everything is streaming. Yeah, everything's streaming.
You wait till it comes out. You don't like theaters. You don't go
No,
to
I
theaters.
like theaters. We just haven't been. Like, everything comes out on streaming. Amazon Prime, Peacock, Netflix.
And don't be going with that because the prices with these, man, I'm about to
Oh,
start cutting
yeah.
these things off. Like
Yeah.
it's getting nuts.
I will only get certain ones if I like Peacock. I have it because WWE. And that's crazy because WWE comes on Fox, but to see the special events, you have to have streaming. So they're all making, it's just a moneymaker.
It's the penny pinching to get you to watch the premium
Yes.
content. Right.
So along that vein, so now baseball season started to come about, and so for the Yankees, like to watch a Yankees game is a mystery because they have certain games on Apple TV. They have some games on, I think, on Peacock. I think HBO Max is starting to get into sports, so they because I know they're
Oh,
carrying like
wow.
NBA games, so they maybe carry some baseball games as well. And it's like, yo, like, or and they have games on their own network. On the YES Network. I'm like, yo, I have no idea where to watch the games because there's like 10 different companies that have the games, and they're all behind paywalls. Like you have to pay. Like I said, you have to
Oh,
pay
that's
for the streaming.
crazy. It's like pay-per-view. It's like pay-per-view was back in the day. So they all
But there
become in the
was only
streaming
one
pay-per-view.
pay-per-view.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's true.
Now
That's
there's
true.
like 10 different
Oh my
pay-per-views.
gosh.
Yep.
I was like,
That's
yo,
very
man,
true.
I can't keep up. I can't do it. I don't know. Well, Neen, this was absolutely fantastic. I thought you were a great guest. Had a great time
Thank you.
having you on. And
Yep.
so before we go, we have want to ask if you have any last words, comments you want to share with our listeners.
Well, I would like to tell your listeners how they can get in contact with me. They can visit my website. It's resumesbyneen.com. Or they can find me on LinkedIn, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, all at Resumes by Neen. But on LinkedIn, it's actually my name, so Janine Wiggins. And I've truly enjoyed this chat today. Cyber is super important, regardless of if you're working in the industry or you have a business that you need to protect, or just an individual, you need to protect your own documents and whatnot.
Awesome.
All right.
Thank you so
So
much.
that's a wrap. So that's a wrap. So thank you for tuning in to the Cyber Coffee Hour. If you enjoyed this episode, please like, share, and subscribe. Follow us on all of our platforms. You can find the Cyber Coffee Hour on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts.
Yes.
That is a wrap, and we'll catch you out on the next one. Peace.